We are the pirates who don't do anything. We just say it all and lie around. And if you ask us to do anything, we'll just tell you we don't do anything. We're the pirates who don't do anything. We just say it all and lie around. And if you ask us to do anything, we'll just tell you we don't do anything.
Welcome to the Pirate Monk Podcast.
Welcome.
Very early on a West Coast Monday.
In a remote broadcast.
In a remote broadcast facility bunker, which shall remain nameless.
Yeah, we're in an undisclosed location
and
in the Central Coast.
I'm David Mullen, and as always, we have our fearless leader, Nate Larkin.
Not later.
And we don't have our engineer Mondo with us today. He's
snowbound.
Is he?
Yes. Same thing, yeah.
Let's get knee-bound, brother. Knee-bound. And pray for Mondo as he is in the snow in the great white north. Something like that.
Something like that.
And we've been out here, of course, as you know, at the 48 Hours of Frankness.
Intensive, not a retreat. The 48 Hours of Frankness, Samson Intensive.
Hey, what's the difference between an intensive and a retreat?
It's
not a...
actually, we've called it a retreat in the past.
Uh-huh.
And retreat sounds relaxing.
Right.
Like you're just going to go and meditate a
lot. It wasn't very relaxing.
Get a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
No.
No.
No, this is... we're going all the way through all seven stages of the path in 48
yeah.
hours.
And cooking pizza.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So... anyway, it was an exciting weekend, wasn't it?
It was. It was really good, actually. It was really good.
And we got some guys with us here in the bunker, even farther than we did.
That's right. And we'll get to them shortly. And
well, excuse me.
Hey, who's the host here? Don't hijack the show, would you?
Okay.
Now, we're going to do some of our things, and we're going to get into introduce you to some of the people that were there, do a little spotlight on a couple of groups.
Oh, nice.
And introduce you to some of the friends that we met on the 48 Hours of Frankness out here in wonderful California. And we'll do that when we get back.
They tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no, no. Yes, I've been black, but when I come back, no, no, no. I ain't got the time, and if my daddy thinks I'm fine, they try to make me go to rehab. I won't go, go, go. I'd rather be at home with Ray. I ain't got 17
here on the Pirate Monk Podcast, and as always, Nate, we like to spotlight a certain group of guys who are walking through the path, who are doing the stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the really one of the early adopters, as we like to call them.
Yeah.
Back in Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, I love this story, really. Aaron Porter, who we're going to talk to in a second, is really responsible for bringing Samson to California. It was about 5 years ago.
In a covered wagon?
Yeah.
He was moveless. And nothing but mountains before him.
Samson, I hadn't written Samson and the Pirate Monks, but I had come up with a book proposal. Didn't you see a book proposal, Aaron? Or did you see a chapter? Or?
No, you just started sending chapter.
Yeah, that was later, I think. But
I'd spoken
for a World Vision Artist Retreat.
Oh, that was when it was Delilah and the Amazon.
Yeah, that, before
sir.
We changed the title. at any rate, this guy who I don't know calls me from California and says, would you come out and talk to the guys in our church? And I said, well, I don't travel alone anymore. Let me check at the next meeting and see if anybody will come with me. So I brought it up. Mm-hmm. 25 guys volunteered.
And then they all come?
So we brought them all.
Are you joking?
I'm not joking. We brought 25 guys to California. We had a fantastic weekend. We did a day event in which we actually outnumbered the participants. But Dave Mayfield was in that group. Uh-huh. Dave went home, started working the phones. Other people worked the phones. We did an evening event, and there were 200 or 300 guys here.
Wow.
And we went home. That trip did as much for our group as it did for anybody here. But Samson got rolling in California from that trip, and this 48 hours of frankness was planned by Dave Mayfield and that original group.
Really?
Yeah, they were just going to have a small retreat for their guys, and it kind of got out of hand.
Oh, yeah, it kind of bloomed into a mighty thing.
Yeah. So anyway, in addition to the expected here in San Luis, Aaron, ever the innovator, has helped launch a group that I absolutely love. This is a closed group for pastors only. Called the Pastor Pirates.
Are there any non-pastors in it?
No, they're not invited.
Well, of course they're not. But are there any in it? I got him. Is there a point to that question?
It's so early. You're pounding me.
I can find it. So tell me, what's a meaning of the Pastor Pirates like? I mean, what's the typical thing?
That's actually interesting because the structure is a great structure, the regular structure, the Franklin structure, as we call it.
The Franklin structure.
The Franklin iteration.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. Or the mothership, as I like to say.
Okay. Yeah.
That structure is great so that new guys can come in and feel anytime.
Right.
So when you've got a closed meeting and you've got between 8 and 15 guys, you start to feel like you don't need to keep that structure because you can just kind of roll with it. Fly by the seat of your pants a little more. So we tried, I would say, at least 5 to 7 different versions. Mm-hmm. And after about a year and a half, we finally hit on the structure. It's the exact same structure as the Franklin group. So after that, we tried mixing the meeting after the meeting and the meeting itself. And the meeting is just like any other meeting.
Wow.
We actually meet at a dance club that during the day has lots of space to eat and
really?
Have privacy.
Wow. And how many guys come now?
Right now, we had some guys move away, and then we changed the time, which was a bad thing. And we just in the last 6 months started to get going again. I think the last meeting there were about 9.
Yeah, a lot of great guys. Tom, Phil, a lot of great guys. Great guys. Special.
And they were all, I think at that, we have a few from another town now, but at that retreat, I think we were all from the city of San Luis Obispo. So there were 12 pastors there from one city, from Presbyterian churches, 2 different Presbyterian churches, an Baptist church, parachurch organizations.
Yeah, so I remember that. Like, it was a little awkward because, you weren't sure, you know what I mean? Which is great, I think. Because you're not sure how people are, and you're walking around and talking, having different discussions, and you're not sure because we're from the outside, we don't know who's who, And so it's very interesting, to sort of try to guess the denomination.
It was the heartwarming thing for me, and I really loved that weekend. Is that as a rule, the pastor is the most isolated guy in the church. He's the one guy who can't have a real friend within the denomination, or within the congregation. And to see real brotherhood at work among these pastors was so inspiring to me.
Yeah, and That is your phone.
Yeah.
Our time's up. Thanks for listening to the Samson podcast today, the 1st of February.
You just timed out.
That's why the pastor pirate thing's so necessary. There's perceived need for isolation that's just totally wrapped up in a pastor's head, and it's not true.
Yeah.
And there's some very real stuff where people feel pretty uncomfortable knowing all the pastor's stuff because they want happy to remove the pedestal, but if you just jerk it out from under them, that can really mess with people's faith. And we didn't create it, but we live with it. And so to have a place to not feel like someone's faith needs to be protected as you're talking honestly is a good thing. And I tried, I think I mentioned when we talked before on that interview, we started a college Samson group here a few years ago, and I went to the first meeting, had a great guy kind of teach, and he and I went first with sharing, and I shared, and the guys, there's about 15 college guys now listen, and we're so appreciative of the honesty and candor with which I brought my my confession, and then a guy said, "Yeah, thanks. Hey, I feel kind of uncomfortable with Pastor Aaron here. Can we?" And they kicked me out after my sharing time.
Now, for those of you who don't know, here in San Luis Obispo, the college is Cal Poly. Is that right?
Yes,
yeah, Cal Poly, and it's technical.
Yeah, California Polytechnics.
And agricultural and engineering school, and more engineering than agriculture, from what I can tell.
But if you're a football fan, you might want to switch from the Gators to the Mustangs, because really I think they're up and coming.
I think they're a comer. So that's Aaron Porter, and
I want to know, and then this is going to be a great segue to Kim, because he can talk real authoritatively about pastors. What advice would you give, Aaron, to a pastor listening about how to go find brothers? If a guy, I mean, he's living out in, you know, East Overshoot, and he's a pastor.
East Overshoot.
And he needs brothers. How would you recommend he go about doing it?
I would recommend that he starts with one or two pastors, and he starts slipping in some really honest moments and sees what happens. Because there are a lot of pastors that that aren't going to go there.
Yeah, they're just hit the brakes, throw it in reverse, right.
Right.
Okay.
So I think our group started with a handful of relationships I already had, and then we could invite a few more in. And at the meetings, really to come check out the meeting, they need to read the book first so that they get what it's about before they come. It's really not within a context that most pastors have ever entered into. So just saying, come check it out, that's just scary for a lot of guys.
Right. And it could really torque a meeting, too.
It can torque a meeting, and it can mess with relationships.
Right.
If a guy comes and he's like, wow, that was really awkward, I want nothing to do with it, but he's just sat through the meeting, that's, you know, we still have to go have our meetings other times where we don't want that kind of information to be a part of those meetings.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that was cynical. Sorry.
So don't try to commandeer a meeting another description. So.
And don't try to recruit pastors. Make friends.
Just make friends.
And then start getting together.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's how it forms. But the real segue to Ken, you've got my Silas in the room.
All right.
You're
the
matchmaker.
Okay, so I get a phone call from Aaron over a year ago now. I really think I need a Silas from out of town. Nothing against these guys here, but somebody I don't know, somebody I can't spin so easy. And
The reason being, because I think out of town Silas, not always the best way. That can be a good escape kind of thing. But as I was getting to know my own control. Ace, because I'm a subtle control freak.
No, you're not.
So anyway, yes.
I feel that I'm a skilled and subtle control freak.
Okay.
To those less perceptive than David Mullen.
Okay.
And I just started realizing if I know what denomination a guy's from, what his background is, what school did he go to, I'll have conversations. we're gonna get together and understand each other based on all of that.
Mm.
That's, you know, it's maybe one part good communication and polite behavior, and one part manipulation, and you just go through it. But I felt like with my Silas's, it was really hard to just, I was speaking the truth, but I was speaking in a way that was always cooked to their liking. And so I just wanted a person that I didn't know if they were a Christian, what church they went to. I didn't know what their job was. Mm. And I remember telling you, it doesn't have to be a pastor, minister person. Just give me someone who's willing.
Yeah.
And it was funny because when I guess you talked to Ken.
Yeah.
And when I called, and he graciously agreed to not give me any information about himself for the first 3 or 4 months, it was terrifying to speak to a person, a really good person. What I was going to say was going to offend him or shock him, or I had no gauge for the reaction. I couldn't see his face, so I'm talking to the other end of a receiver, someone listening quietly, and I have no way to filter what I'm saying to make it more acceptable to him.
And, Ken, for you, have you had enough caffeine to answer questions?
I think I have.
What was it like for you? That would be really weird to have someone you don't even know.
Well, once I led Aaron to Christ, I felt like there was real promise for him to be a pastor.
To be a pastor.
Yeah. Yeah. Knowing that he was in California, and you know the true dwelling of Jesus was in the South, we had to get through that.
That's right.
Yeah. I think we agreed early on. He tried a couple of his stuff, which we pastors do at times, and I made it pretty clear I wasn't going to chase him. I wasn't going to fix him. Right up front, he could spin all the lies he wanted to me on the phone. It really didn't matter to me. It wasn't about me. Right. And I wasn't going to try to get through his stuff. He had to. That's the beauty. It's the scariest thing for a pastor, Samson. It's about you, and that's the scariest thing for a pastor, to have to be truthful with yourself. Pastoral ministry is a lifelong calling of unconsummated love. They spend their life trying to help people become lovers, and unconsummated in that we don't often get to see the real effect of what the love of God does in someone's life. We're the best friend introducing another best friend to our best friend.
Oh, shushman.
And that relationship takes place, and so we start deceiving ourselves by trying to extract the love we often want ourselves.
Mm.
We start deceiving ourselves by extracting the situation or the event or the course of ministry, we start deceiving ourselves and falsifying that love by trying ourselves to fill in those places where we're unloved.
Mm.
And so it can start as something as just meeting with someone, and you can project or try to extract from them the very pain you have because you feel all alone.
Mm.
And we believe the lie that we're pastors believe the lie that we're somehow so different we can't share our stuff. And I started talking, and we really did start talking, and it was from both ends. He was brutally honest, and he'd say, "Well, that's it. That's my check-in." And I'd say, "Talk to you later."
Wow.
And we'd hang up. Sometimes we'd talk every day, and other days it'd be 2 or 3 days, and we'd have gaps, but slowly it began to develop over time. Other things, and then it gets blurred. You begin to walk in a friendship, and you become Silas's to each other in that regard. And that's why it's hard to pull pastors together. This is a scary place for a pastor to walk into, and they're longing and dying to do it. And more often than not, they're just dying.
So if you do walk into it, and it's a successful thing, it's a whole other level, do you think, or what's the, like, I'm looking at what if you walk in and it's a train wreck,
walk into
a Silas relationship as a pastor, and it's a train wreck. I mean, is there really a downside? I mean, because isn't it a train wreck anyway? It's just being kind of covered up.
Well, I can't imagine that it would train wrecks, because you're not going to pick a Silas that you just don't know unless...
Unless you're Aaron Porter.
Yeah.
And you pick some southern cat from North Carolina.
I don't even know if I knew he was from North Carolina.
Not at that point, yeah.
The cool thing is you guys didn't lay eyes on each other till this weekend, right?
No, with the cabin.
Oh, that's right. You came to the cabin because you guys are working together on the workbook.
That's
right. Yeah,
that was a nervous moment of going like, we're going to meet face to face.
I thought you were taller.
I heard string music.
I don't see that. There's probably going to be a lot of train wrecks for people, because especially for pastors, if they're drawing from other pastors and their pastor group, and it's someone they trust.
I have a question, though. Can we go back and unpack that a little bit before what we were talking about the present and the past and confessing things that, you know, last week or whatever? And do people really believe that their pastor's struggles are like their struggles, you know what I mean?
Or their pastor's struggles are all in the past.
Or
their present pastoral struggles are
all in the spiritual theological realm, right, you know, that sort of thing.
That's true of you. You stopped sinning when?
Yeah. Right
around the second year of seminary?
Yeah, I was on probation with the threat to take back my degree if I didn't stop sinning. So there was a period after Bible college that there was a little relapse, but I'm okay now. Everything Ken said about pastors not necessarily experiencing the loves that they teach on and talk about,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that there's a lot of perceived and real isolation, makes incredible candidates for self-medication and for false intimacy,
mm-hmm.
because it's a safe place for them to go, where they're not going to get hurt, there's no risk. But a lot of people feel like, oh, the pastor is very spiritual. He's not just a member of our church who happens to have gifts of leading and teaching.
Right.
He's something else, which pushes him farther into isolation.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I think it's really huge for even pastors who are listening to this podcast to understand that their pastors, and you know, I say this and I know people are going to say, oh, I know my pastor struggles. Honestly, as a pastor, people don't act like they know that. In a conversation, they'll give a hat nod to it. Yep, sure, you're just a man. But you feel that difference. And again, part of it's totally self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
But to be around men who treat you like men, to be around others who just treat you like a fellow traveler on this planet, trying to learn to live by the power of the Holy Spirit day by day, is an amazing gift to give a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand the very fact they are a pastor puts them very much in harm's way. I think a lot of times we just say, oh, pastors are in danger because Satan guns for them first and all that.
And there's a lot of truth in that, but...
Right, sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
In fact, I mean, just as anecdotal evidence, but it's first-hand evidence. Ken, why don't you just enumerate Aaron's sins from last week? No, I'm just...
It's on Facebook.
Ken has a blog called Aaron's Most Recent.
Oh, my goodness.
But so pastors, what you're saying is pastors are prime candidates,
mm-hmm.
for any of the isolating sins.
Any isolating sins.
Right.
And then... We were talking earlier, off mic, about being present tense about that, how important it is. And we have one of our pastor pirates who's just brilliant at it. He's really inspiring, because every week he brings himself where he's at right then, which means he doesn't do the clever manipulation of giving a testimonial of victory on last week's sins, or the week's before.
Or his close call.
Yeah, close call.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just a way for us not to have to really go there. Because if I show up and say, yeah, I was struggling last week,
That's easier than saying that.
I spent a lot of time with Jesus, and it worked out. I feel really good now. I feel close. I'm doing great with my family. Now we can just celebrate the victory and never actually deal with me.
Right.
And so to be able to say, this is what I'm struggling with right now, and to make the Silas calls, I got for not calling Ken at 3 in the morning before giving him the next day update.
Mm-hmm.
And
or if you were struggling, call me then.
Right. Well, it was like, hey, last night, had a hard night. It's like, why didn't you call me last night? Because I didn't want to wake you up.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's correct.
So. It isn't, yeah, it is. Let's go there for a minute, because like most of the guys, if I called them at 3 in the morning, they would not pick up the phone. So you would say they, what?
Tell the truth to the...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
Really, because that's the crucial thing. I've got to say it out loud to another guy.
Right. And get in the habit of doing it too, because he will pick it up
right
more times than not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a pastor or not, just walking in that relationship, when it goes long term, you wonder, is this real? Am I going to stay real? Am I going to stay, as Aaron was saying, as we're talking about, am I going to stay in the present with this, or am I just going to kind of bring back, here's my list from last week? And the subtleties we tell ourselves is, I'll just kind of bring the list.
I got to tell you, man, this is hitting me where I live. I mean,
yeah.
Mm.
Well, and it's great when your present tense starts to get future as well.
Mm.
I was just reminded that 3 months ago was researching something, legitimate research for an issue someone was having.
Mm.
Had no idea it was going to put viruses like mad on my computer.
Oh, yeah?
It was somebody's issue. I needed to go find some information about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got hit with this virus that was dumping like porn thumbnail links all over my desktop. So I was in staff meeting while this was happening as well. So I'm having thumbnails.
Mm.
The youth pastor came over and tried to help me subtly during this meeting. But one of the other guys in staff has my XXX church account. So
mm-hmm.
my inappropriate activity goes to the worship pastor. And I said, hey, dude, just so you know, I have no idea what's going to show up on my account, but I'm getting mm-hmm. porn dumped on my desktop. And it was amazing. I don't think I've been hit with this feeling this strong for a long time,
mm.
where I immediately went, he knows he might get some bad report. Like, I've got a virus on my computer already.
Yeah.
The guy that's going to get the report saying that there would be porn, I just told there might be reports of porn.
Right.
It was amazing. Like, this whole plan just, like, dropped in my middle of staff meeting. And I wanted to keep it. That was the other part. It wasn't just a plan. It was this desire to just kind of nurture. Oh, my gosh, I just got a free pass. I don't remember the last time I had a free pass.
Oh, wow.
I felt like I was 19 again at Los Angeles, where I could sneak away.
Yeah.
And and so living in the future tense, with all those feelings came the terror. And I just said, hey, dude, you look at your watch. You know what time this stuff just got dumped on here. And quite frankly, I just got a free pass. And by saying that out loud, I'm like, oh, okay, we just screwed what was going to become. So that's kind of where you start living future tense. And I don't remember whether or not I called you about that, Ken, but that would have been part of the Silas thing. I think I did.
You did call me.
Yeah, so that's like, okay, now I need to unpack the feelings. But, oh, man, because that was so unsafe. That was the terror feeling.
And, yeah. I had you memorize the book of Leviticus to cleanse your mind.
yeah, that's really strong. And I think that change is brought by community.
Life for roving over the sea. Give me a career as a buccaneer. It's a life of a pirate for me. Oh, the life of a pirate for me.
And we are back at the Pirate Monk Podcast. Hey, Nate, there's a lot of people in the room today, and we've been referring, kind of cross-referencing and stuff, people who are in the room. So just for the benefit of our listeners, could you maybe just introduce everybody? And
sure.
Let them know?
There is... you, David Mullen.
Yeah, I'm here.
Nate Larkin. Yep.
You've heard from Aaron Porter.
Aaron Porter, yeah. across the room.
The porn pastor.
let's do another restart here.
And Aaron Porter. Porter, the refreshingly candid pastor of San Luis Obispo. Yeah.
I'm stuck on porn pastor, actually.
it just sounded good together, you know what I mean?
But alliteration is not always wise.
It's not how it's cracked up to be.
And we've got a couple of guys who've come, as I said, even further than we did, from Greensboro, North Carolina, from the Samson group out there, Ken Chester, and Scott Fosberg.
Okay. And you guys, hey Scott, how you doing?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing
good. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're out here. And the reason you came is because you sort of have a solid relationship with.
Absolutely. With Ken. Yeah, we started our Greensboro Pirates a couple of years ago, and Ken and I have been walking as brothers for four and a half years.
Wow. Well, tell me a little about that. Y'all, is that a group of? That's not a pastor's group. That's like just a normal Samson group, and y'all meet once a week or once a month.
Yeah, don't all good Samson groups meet on Monday nights?
So that's it.
We meet in an auto parts store. Lots of smell of hoses and.
Do you really?
Pipes. Yeah, absolutely.
That is awesome.
Cool.
Do y'all have like a name? Like, is it like a NASCAR name or something?
Yeah, that would be good. No, just Greensboro Pirates. You know, it was pretty lame, but it was all we could come up with at the time. We meet Monday nights. There's anywhere from 8 to 12 guys that show up, just depending on, you know, schedules and that type of thing. But
one of my favorite things is, like, to, like, sort of know the professions. So, I don't even know the names of people, but just what are some of the things that people do? What are some of the professions of the people that are in the group? You're a doctor, right, or something?
that was the predominant rumor this weekend, was that I was some kind of doctor. So I ran with that for quite a bit of the weekend.
It looked good.
Yeah.
Gave a couple exams.
That's right.
And don't anybody talk to me unless you call me Dr. Scott.
This was the running joke was that it was amateur proctology.
I thought it turned into hobbyist proctology.
Hobbyist.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's different.
Practical. I can't even say it. So, okay. Well, what do you do then?
I sell real estate.
Oh, okay, so a real estate agent.
That's right. We've got, guys, a whole gamut of occupations, from guys that work at the airport. We've got pastors. We've got businessmen.
Nice.
Retired postal workers.
Yeah.
Shoe salesman?
None of those.
Mm-hmm. Anybody work at the auto parts store? Okay, just checking. I was curious.
We just break in.
And what do you do, Ken? do you have a job?
Do I have a day job?
Ken ain't got no job. I've been telling you for years, Ken ain't got no job.
Officially, I guess I'd be described as I work in a men's ministry. And I meet with guys in coffee shops and over lunches and dinners and just building friendships and relationships and talking and so
you've been doing that for years then?
A long time. Yeah, I've pastored some. That's sort of a love-hate type relationship because of the structure. This is probably fits me a lot better just to be available to meet with guys where they are. A lot of times it's just listening to their stuff. But
Samson's a fairly new thing, right? I mean, and you obviously, right, an early adopter as well.
I bought the book purely for the title. I didn't know what was in it. I loved the title. Scott read it, and we said, we've got to do this. Halfway through the book, I turned to my wife, Carolyn, and I said, I've got to have this. I've got to have this for me. Mm-hmm. For me. Not for other guys. Mm. For me. And Scott read it and said, let's do this. And so we just shared the book and started meeting, and
that's really cool.
And it's, I can say from my end, it has radically changed how I do ministry. Mm. It's taken all the pressure off. I don't, like Aaron and I've talked, and or Scott and I, we meet for coffee, and there'll be four or five guys where we meet for coffee. They'll just start sitting down. And we start talking.
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, that's a pretty common phenomenon.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
People get hungry for it, for real. They see two guys that are really good friends, and they kind of hear little pieces of the conversation as they go by. and they just stop. They just, you know.
Yeah. And when you're in the South, everybody assumes you go to the same church. That's
right.
The common thing that come by. Like, you guys all go to church together, and that's, we just laugh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are. We're in church right now, brother. We're in church right now. So all these guys, including Aaron, were at
the 48-hour intensive that we just did here in Central Coast. Can you give me your impressions after the weekend?
Yeah, this is my Nate impression. So it was a good weekend.
He meant like what, like impression?
Oh, okay.
Upon your heart.
Yeah,
really.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Wow, that was
really good, by the way.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
I was feeling it. Yeah. All right, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you go ahead. What was your takeaway this weekend?
This was the second time going through with Nate, and last time was all college students.
Mm.
And so I loved, we had a lot of college students this weekend, and I really loved watching that generation that takes all this for granted.
Mm.
Because this is, if I was to look back 50 years ago, I see a generation with a lot of discipline and very little insight.
Mm-hmm.
They worked their butts off, but they didn't. They didn't ask the why questions. They just knew this is what I do because I'm a man.
Mm.
This generation has amazing amount of insight. I mean, that's all they do is blog and write and express their feelings.
Mm.
But they have crap discipline. They're horrible. When it's time to fight for something, they just quit and go start something else.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
So to watch those two generations come together, both having a strength in a completely different area, for the young people to hear guys in their 50s and 60s say, do you have any idea how lucky you are to be here at 21?
Yeah.
That was just so fun to watch.
Mm.
So I loved the mixed group. I loved the intimacy, even though there was 110 guys there, that there was real intimacy and real work, and watching that group bond together. There were guys from how many states? Like 5 or 6 states.
Yeah.
And yet they all felt like one group. I couldn't see the lines of, oh, that's the group from Irvine, and that's the group from Simi Valley and San Diego. So that, I think that's my favorite part, just watching.
Yeah.
Now, for somebody who's just new to Samson or maybe has those some of the terms but doesn't really know what's going on, like, briefly, just kind of what is a 48 Hours of Frankness?
Well, it's kind of a quick start introduction to the Samson way of life, or the what I pretentiously like to think of as the Christian way of life. I mean, it's collaborative Christian living.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can go through these 7 stages of the path and get a taste of every one. Let's get up some momentum. Let's go all the way through. So that by the end of the weekend, a guy, almost half the guys who came this weekend had never been to a Samson meeting before.
Mm. Yeah, that really was surprising.
Yeah.
To me,
so we ran Samson meetings on the second night, which was terrific.
Yeah, that was good.
But by the end of the weekend, everybody had had a Silas, been a Silas, done some personal Course and Consequences work, had shared that with a Silas, had gotten started on daily disciplines, had gotten started on
grievances and
on amends, had some practice submitting their decision-making process to other guys. So we kind of pushed the envelope hard. It was a busy week,
right?
But a tremendous sense of accomplishment for most guys by the end of the week.
Right. So you've been through all those things that really do make up this sort of pirate monk lifestyle,
and it's not a speaker based weekend. I loved being there because I really didn't have to say anything.
Right.
My contribution was pre-recorded. I just hung around and
most of the guys didn't know that it was you that was pre-recorded, which I just found amusing. And because we were walking around and they're like, "And you're from Franklin? Wow, why did you come all this way?"
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh, I love the first time you spoke was for the reading of the 23rd Psalm.
Right.
Yeah.
And where you're giving your reading voice. And
right.
You're like, that's so weird.
He sounds exactly like the guy I've been listening to in the recording. And the light bulbs start going on all over the room. Boop, boop.
Yeah, but it's not a personality-based weekend.
Right.
And guys are really getting into other guys, sharing their life honestly with another man. So there was kind of this explosion of ministry. In my mind, this is a whole lot more effective than the typical
men's retreat
mm-hmm. that's based on one guy. And I do a lot of those too, but I love this weekend.
But yeah, sometimes you have to commandeer, men's retreats and just to introduce them to Sansom and give them a taste of it. Scott, what was your sort of take?
I want to ask a question for them, because they do a lot of men's ministry and men's weekends, uh-huh. and not to say that any of those are bad or don't have effective aspects to them, but what I'm curious, comparatively, you as leaders and facilitators, kind of what the differences are.
Yeah.
I think, as Nate, you were describing, there was much more of a sense of this being a ministry weekend, and I don't mean that in any kind of religious way, but there was work to be done.
Mm.
And oftentimes, other retreats that I've been on have been, it's viewed as, this is a chance for me to get out of town for the weekend, and I'll play a little golf in the afternoon, and certainly a byproduct of being there is that there's a speaker, and you might take some notes, but there's not a drive towards let's get specific and let's get real and let's let's really hone in on some of the things that we're dealing with. And so what I love about it was, I came in thinking that it would be somewhat along these lines, that there'd be some work to be done. And I think the very first call out for us to go and spend some time talking through course of our sins, I sat there with God and said, well, I've been through this.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I, what else is there, Lord? Why am I going through this again?
Mm.
But that there was something that had come up in the audio portion about this being a progressive process, and that it's a peeling back of layers. Mm. And so while I've sat with the course of my sin a number of times, as I sat there again this weekend, God revealed more to me, and really even some new things that I've really not fully developed and dealt with. So I love just the specific drive towards let's get real, and that doesn't often happen in a lot of typical men's weekends.
Mm. What do you think, Ken?
I play golf a lot.
Yeah. You just sit there and look pretty.
Lovely. I thought you liked the word lovely.
Oh, lovely.
We've done quite a few men's retreats, weekends, thought through the dynamics over the last few years about men's weekends. Just thinking in a macro view of it is that, the church now is so product-driven by men's stuff. There's lots of good things. So this really is, I think, as Nate and you said, David, this is an intensive. You come to work this weekend. We purposely, Scott and I both talked about this. We came this weekend not to look at this like, let's go do this weekend and bring it back to Greensboro or bring it back to North Carolina. We're going to come and experience this weekend for us.
For yourself, yeah.
And purposely shut down this idea that I'm coming to get a broad view and what do we tweak to take back? And so we'll talk about that with the guys and see if that's what God wants to bring. We'd love to do that. But this was a... personally, this weekend was life-changing.
Mm-hmm. That's how I felt too. I thought I was coming just so Nate would have somebody to come with, and I think that's how we planned it originally. And then he took a little vacation, and then I was coming on my own. I thought I was just coming out here to be his friend. You know what I mean? Just to be with him, and it was good.
I deal with a lot of guys. Our view, we talk about this a lot. Guys over 50 are dying in droves in churches and out of churches. Mm-hmm. They quit living. We quit talking about kingdom. Nobody's asking us what's really going on in our marriages, what are the deep So guys over there, 45, 50, just become laboratories for every possible fantasy, sin, struggle, habit, addiction, loneliness. And, you know, that is the number one. Loneliness is the number one disease in a man's heart. Mm-hmm. And that's after doing from 20 years of ministry surveys with what we do. That is the number one issue. 10 years ago, pornography was not even on the list of what men struggled with. But the number one issue that men struggled with across the board age-wise is loneliness.
Mm. Yeah.
And this this weekend, as Nate described, you're with a Silas. You deal with your courses. You become a Silas. You're with a Silas. I sat with a guy that shared some things we'd never met. And
Does that piss anybody else off? I mean, you just said that. And what have we heard forever? Well, women are relational. They're the relational ones. And all of this focus in our church culture is on trying to facilitate the relational needs of a woman because they're the relational ones.
Yeah.
And you're sitting here saying that the greatest disease, the most common answer, the biggest cannon that shoots you into false intimacy is the fact that, go figure, we're relational too.
Yeah.
We were in the garden as well. What? Really?
You know, I talked with a guy at the end of the weekend and just asked him how the weekend went. And it really struck me what he said. He said, "I didn't know until I got here how lonely I've been." But he made friends. I saw him in deep conversation with a number of guys throughout the weekend. And he went home with friendships. And it's those friendships that will change his life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to Ken's point, you know, just like how you leave yourself open to everything. I think my takeaway, just that last day, you know, when everybody is sort of enumerating their things and nobody knows whose thing is what, and they kind of just enumerate their sins and everybody goes and picks up somebody else's sin.
Secret. That's really
secret. Yeah.
Sin is an easy word. Secret is the stuff that get men. Secrets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sins are pretty real. You know what those are. The secrets are what eat us up.
Yeah. It's true. And but that was like that for me was the big thing. It was like to see like guys who came in and they're normal, kind of like cagey kind of way. You know, you're not really sure who's in what spot, you know, and you got to find sort of the pecking order kind of a thing, and then all that kind of go away and run out the window after the first session, you know what I mean? And to end like with people picking up other people's secrets is a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah, it was.
And to see people go through their courses, as they say, basically saying these are the things that have happened to me through the decades, and then saying, and these are the consequences of these things that happened to me through the decades, and now this is what I feel because of that, you know, and this is the things that I did as a consequence of that, you know what I mean, and then like just owning all your stuff, I mean, and have that all back to back, and have it demonstrated for you. Is a very powerful thing, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think most men will ever do this. And so to, like, have 110 guys do it at one time and then, you know, you just wish you could just, like, bottle it and send it to every church in the country, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I found that going through the course, I'd been through that before. That was the part I felt like, God, I've laid this out. I've enumerated this in a number of situations. But to think about the consequences to myself and to the others in my life was a place that I've really not gone before. And so that work, as God began peeling that layer back, really just, it's so, there's a depth to that I'm anxiously looking forward to peeling more of that back. And I know that when I get home, as we often do, my wife and I will, I'll be faced with that question about, so what did you guys talk about? You know, what happened this weekend? And I've got that choice of sitting down and saying, you know, God's really doing some things. And I've looked at this weekend at the impacts of some of my actions and how they've affected you and the rest of the family. And really, you know, laying my heart out before her and have an opportunity to, I don't want to call it come clean, because it's really not that. It's just about being honest and letting her know that I recognize that my actions have had a significant impact on her, because I think that touches something in her that maybe she, you know, she hasn't heard from me yet.
You know what it is for me? It's just like Jesus just got a whole lot bigger, you know?
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
Strong enough to carry all that, you know?
Yeah.
He can hear it. She's not going to be afraid of it.
Yeah.
There's a great passage in the Message that says about Jesus, so spacious in He and so roomy that everything of God finds its proper place in Him without crowding. And that's what you discover on this, like this weekend. Your stuff, He's big enough for your stuff. And you don't have to be crowded inside anymore. That's a great way to describe it, Dave. Jesus gets bigger.
Wow. That's beautiful.
I'm glad y'all were here.
It's been a good visit. It's been a great trip to California and a privilege to spend deep time with brothers. It's going to be interesting. You know, I looked at this weekend. This was some of the ripples from a weekend 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I couldn't help but wonder, as we ended the weekend, where the ripples are going to go from here.
Yeah, 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks, guys, for being here. And, you know, we're all gonna get together again soon. But I appreciate your hearts and what you're doing. And we're going to be right back on the Power of Monk podcast.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me. We pillage, we plunder, we rifle and loot. Drink up, me hearty's yo ho. We kidnap and ravage and don't give up. Drink up, me hearty's yo ho. Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me.
And we're back at the Pirate Monk podcast, Nate. As so often, I say that was powerful.
That was powerful. Good stuff.
That was good stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I just wish everybody could have been there this weekend. Everybody, you know, for those of you listening, we've just pushed over 2,000 subscribers. Thank you very much. And I wish all 2,000 of you could have been there and witnessed it. Just flies on the wall. But, you know, I mean, you don't have to wait around, right? I mean,
right. Any group can run a 48 hours of frankness. It's kind of a retreat in the box. The guys in Knoxville have run two. And the first time they did it, nobody had ever been to a 48 hours. We sent them the materials. Now, they had the audacity to improve it.
Right. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you, Rob Brown. And Rob makes that whole package available.
Right there at Samson Society?
SamsonSociety.org. You can click on the link at the right-hand side of the page and get the information on the retreat packet.
And
you know, with all the stuff, the audios, the worksheets, all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of a paint-by-numbers thing. It's
Now, how do they get the audio files and stuff?
Yeah.
That information is
there? All that information is on the website, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, I can't encourage you enough to do that. And if you have questions about that, or if you want to have Nate speak in your area or anything like that, or you have questions you want us to consider here on the podcast, we'd encourage you to write. And that address would be?
Letters@SamsonSociety.org.
Letters@SamsonSociety.org.
I'm gonna tell you fabulous man, for real a big deal. And it's like to tell them big people, we don't stop telling them this man. Sure. What we tell them? We back. No retreat, no surrender. We not lotion, sweat, and powder. We tell them, no retreat, no surrender. We not lotion, sweat, and powder. We not powder, sweat, and lotion. This here, any pinkest we can't do in a wheelchair. On the good of drunk, like a salary and kick like a meal. Then I go not a me, me still not go kill. It's like a fabulous point, extra gear. Things go for on the side, far from the side. That's why, no retreat, no surrender. We not lotion, sweat, and powder. We tell them no retreat, no surrender. We not lotion, sweat, and powder. Not to a man that left a clip, I give you. You